Hello, Googleization Nation, and welcome to Beyond the Office, Building and Leading Remote Teams, a GGG Unleashed podcast with thought leader Bill Keller. You'll get the latest research, trends, and tips on remote work to build and lead cohesive teams around the world for the future of work. Let's begin.
Welcome to Beyond the Office. I'm your host, Bill Keller, where we talk about leading and building remote teams. And on today's episode, we have Alex Zerbicki, a seasoned business advisor with Cultivate Advisors, specializing in providing strategic guidance to business owners seeking to optimize their enterprise value. As a part of Cultivate Advisor team, Alex brings a wealth of experience and expertise to the table. With a focus on fostering economic equality and sustainability, Alex collaborates closely with small and medium-sized businesses to develop and implement custom strategies that drive success. His role extends beyond traditional advisory services, delving into the realms of mindset, consciousness, communication, and holistic business optimization. By dismantling monopolies and empowering businesses at a grassroots level, Alex plays a crucial role in advancing the mission of economic empowerment and prosperity for the broader business community. It's great to have you on the show, Alex.
Likewise. I'm very happy to be here. Been a long time. Happy to catch up, too.
Yeah, it's been too long, actually. Alex actually came to visit me in Colombia one time. I think it was last year. And he got to explore with his now wife. So hopefully everything's going well. I think you moved and you're living in Texas now. Where are you? Are you in Dallas or are you in Austin?
I'm in Fort Worth, just outside of Dallas. My wife and I, our one-year anniversary is on Monday. So we're coming up on exactly 1 year of marriage. We visited you shortly before. We actually were there for her birthday in 2022, and very gracious host. We still talk about that trip all the time.
Well, it's great to have you here. So I know you're doing lots of stuff and you're always incredibly busy. You know, I know you have a full slate of clients, but just curious, you know, how did you get into consulting and like what began this journey for you?
Yeah, I was trained in college in finance. I thought I wanted to be a Wolf of Wall Street type, you know, go trade on the floor and make millions and fly helicopters and whatnot. But I started in investment banking and realized very quickly that I didn't like the monotony. I didn't like the folks I was serving. Moved over to private equity. A lot of similar feedback there. Private equity spun out into franchising for me. The company that I was working for became a franchisor. And that was the first time that I was introduced to small business. I had only been concerned with, you know, big portfolios, large institutions, and the small business owner, the entrepreneur, really captivated my interest. And I found some role models in modeling and selling franchises for this franchisor. And over time, that morphed into me being fully entrepreneurial and me gradually serving smaller and smaller businesses. And now we're in mid-market to small market businesses. And it just seems like the folks who will take the risk and bet on themselves to start or buy a business, those are the type of people I want to hang out with. The people who have that leg drive and that interest in kind of exploring and building themselves. And additionally, I believe that small business and medium-sized business, that kind of sector, they're the fabric of economic growth and community and stability. And so, like you graciously mentioned in the lead in there, like I tell myself that I'm fighting big business, I'm fighting monopoly by helping small to mid-market businesses succeed. And so that's what drew me over many years in my adult life to the consulting that I'm doing now and helping these folks.
And I can tell you, you do a great job at that. Alex was my advisor for a while, and you know, his insights were really profound in our business, and it really helped take us to another level. And so I can speak to, you know, your expertise in this area and how you've been able to help, I know, me and other people. So from your experience, you know, what are one or two common mistakes that you often see business owners make?
Most of the errors that I see are conceptual in nature, right? The biggest problem that I see, or the most common problem that I see, is there needs to be a specificity of your vision as a business leader and your mission, how to get there, and your values throughout that journey. I meet with incredibly talented, smart, idealistic business leaders all the time. Their second tier of command often isn't fully in the loop on why we're doing what we're doing, how we're doing it, what we're seeking to accomplish. It's really important to extract that from your head, get specific on it, right? So, and there are business targets, right? Hit 10 million in revenue in 2025 or whatever that goal, but more importantly, you have to clearly state what we're doing, why we're doing it, and what our values are. And every key player on your team has to know that and has to resonate with it. I was working with a nonprofit recently, and it's a nonprofit, it's purpose-driven. I can't tell you who they are, but they had employees, they're grant-based. They had employees who were doing great work out in the field, right? The advocacy type stuff. And they weren't, in order to bill for the grant that gives them money to stay operational, the employees weren't logging their time. They weren't billing their time toward this grant. And repeated, right? There's repeated, hey guys, reminder, you need to do this or we're gonna be in a lot of trouble. And I said, I was like, that would be like volunteering to pick up litter, spending an afternoon shoving a bag full of litter. And then when you get done, like tearing it open and dumping half back out before you put it in the garbage truck, right? Like, and that's a lack of alignment. That's a lack of understanding of like what we're doing, why we're doing it, how we're doing it. And that's a nonprofit. That's about as purpose-driven and alignment-based as you can get, right? And so that's a microcosm of like, all of that needs to be very clearly communicated front of mind all the time, so everybody's running in the same direction. And a lot of that's assumed. A lot of times business leaders think that because I've come up with this great vision and this plan to execute it, even that like others can infer, and it, you know, they call it common sense, but like, that's not common sense. That's alignment. That's communication. And so I would highlight that as the big thing.
So this might be actually what you talked about in the previous question, but I'm curious, what are the biggest challenges you're currently seeing business owners face?
Well, what's one thing that you hear often and you try to solve, right? You can't find good employees, can't find anybody who wants to work, can't find reliable team members or executives or whoever, right? And find is only half of the equation. There is a kind of a reciprocal balance in that you need to find certain things in a team member or whoever, executive, vendor, doesn't matter, in a person, and you need to be able to cultivate, pun intended, cultivate certain things within them, right? If you can't find them, you got to make them. If you can't make them, you got to find them. But usually the answer is somewhere in the middle. You have to know what you have to find in a person, and then what you have to cultivate or make or grow within that person. And I don't think most hiring departments are incredibly clear on that. They're clear on the function of the job and the compensation package and, you know, the office pizza parties and all the other stuff that they try to kind of propagate. And like, I question some of the critical analysis that goes into those processes for folks.
So do you think that's really when I look at an HR department, because again, maybe there's not alignment there with what their job really is? You know, they often see is, oh, it's my job to bring in the right person. But what the right person really is different to them, because like, oh, the right person is the person who has the qualifications and that we think we need. But there's some of these extra things that are difficult that going as well, what do we need to cultivate? You know, so what is our portion of that? You know, we're trying to find the right person as opposed to being the right person kind of in a relationship. I don't know if that makes sense or, you know, how would you recommend that companies differentiate and we're able to say is, okay, this is what the right person is, and this is what we're going to need to bring to the relationship to make them the right fit for the team. Is there a way that you can, you know, any guidance that you can give us there?
Sure. The most obvious guidance is mission, vision, and values clearly communicated helps. It would be really hard to systematically communicate what the right person is without those things in place. And then there's some strategic reverse engineering that has to happen, right? Anybody who's hiring has to think, how are we different from a culture, soft skill, and hard skill standpoint than the landscape from which we're hiring, right? So if we're a law firm, you have to think about what makes you different, culture, soft skill, hard skill, from the legal academia, the other law firms and similar specializations, perhaps the nonprofit and NGO purpose-driven work. Like, you have to think about what those differentiating factors are. And if you can pull those from external sources, if it's reasonable to think that you can pull those from external sources, like if somebody learned any of that in law school, or somebody learned any of that in their first couple of years as a young, spunky attorney, and then you have to kind of transpose your mission, vision, values through that lens and decide which columns each of those factors fall into. I know it's a criminal oversimplification, but that's more or less the mental model.
No, I think that's great. You know, basically kind of going through what are your differentiators in the company. What I heard you saying is go through the differentiators in your company and you say is, okay, somebody could foreseeably basically have had this experience and we could go out into the marketplace and find it. For these differentiators, they're unique to our company and we're going to have to train or focus to help them to learn these particular things so that they can perform well in the organization. That's what I heard you saying. And so that oftentimes I think you said is we often think we're going to go out into the marketplace and we're going to find everything, you know, that's on our list. And the reality is that's probably just not going to happen because we're not really clear on, you know, where those qualities come from and if they can even be found in the marketplace.
Exactly. And I would add one more wrinkle to that is like, how are we going to filter and evaluate for all of this stuff, right? Oftentimes, and you know this well, and you do a really good job of creating systems against this, but oftentimes a hirer, especially if it's a really small business where like an executive or a leader is doing it, there's not an HR department, they'll have this list of things that they need to discover in the interview. And then they'll go just like small talk and, you know, there won't be directed questions, right? So if you say, I need to evaluate for applied empathy, you can't get that from just general conversation. You probably have to put them in a situation or ask them a question or give them a hypothetical in a similar way that you would evaluate for some kind of hard skill. And in that goes for whatever that list of differentiators that you're looking for in the marketplace is. If you can specifically say, I asked this question, they gave this answer, or, you know, gave them this scenario, and I'm going to grade their response 1 through 5 for applied empathy or for whatever the thing is. But if you have that rubric and you're hyper-focused, and then you can equip future people, you know, the HR department, if you hand that list to the HR person and say, hey, 1 through 5 evaluation on these things, and we need an average of 4, that's going to, you're probably going to miss less.
So kind of moving on here, you know, with where we're headed in the world with, you know, there's been this debate, you know, hybrid in the office, total remote. How do you see this really working in the next few years and evolving? And you know, where do you see this headed?
In my opinion, the high talent individuals, like the really smart people that are coming out of college, in college, young professionals, they seem to be more freedom oriented, right? They want freedom financially. They want to make enough money to live their life and pursue whatever they want to pursue. They also want freedom of time and geography. And the jobs that seem to be the sexiest in the labor market are the ones that can offer some combination of those three freedoms. You know, again, when I entered investment banking, it was like, you're trading freedom of time and freedom of location for a lot of money. And that equation doesn't quite work anymore, at least not at scale. And so it's my opinion that we're going to, generation by generation, we're going to move toward some sort of equitable balance between those three freedoms. And, you know, kind of positioning remote employees, overseas employees, you know, the folks that you work with and employ and match, like they are able to gain market share in the labor force right now due to all of the alignment issues that we talked about prior, right? So if a company cannot figure out how to create alignment in an office, they have no shot of doing it in a remote capacity. But the other side of that coin is, if you can figure out how to create specific alignment, you don't need your people in office. And so I think we're going to see this great filtering over time toward those types of trends.
And it's one of the things that I've told many people over the years is with remote staffing, I'm not saying take all your people and move them overseas. Absolutely not, you know, but what I'm telling you is test, because this can actually be a great training ground for most people to, like you said, how do we build alignment with a remote team? So we can do it 10,000 miles away, overseas, cross-culturally. We can do that, you know, locally and in our office. But there's a lot less, I think, risk, you know, if you have one or two people overseas as opposed to, you know, a whole office that you can't bring alignment to. So I really appreciate that answer. So with the rise of technologies like ChatGPT, how do you see AI being integrated into business models of the small and medium-sized businesses that you work with?
Yeah, I forget who said it, but somebody gave me a really good metaphor the other day. When calculators came out, math teachers were like, what are we going to do in class? These kids are going to be crippled. This thing does everything. And then what happened? We now have eighth graders that know advanced mathematical theory because they don't have to waste their time memorizing arithmetic. I think AI, in a way, is represented in like that, right? It's going to get rid of or exacerbate some of the low skill, high time work. It's going to gather data quicker than we can as humans. The people who are going to get ahead are going to be the ones who can use that. So in the calculator metaphor, the ones who can use the arithmetic and then graphing and mapping functions to get to insights faster. And the same thing goes for AI, in my opinion. It's not about skipping out on the work of data collection. It's about using that to allow yourself to move faster or, you know, get better feedback quicker, whatever that thing might be. And I'd also like to point out that you've probably seen this. If you scroll through LinkedIn or anywhere else, you can tell what blog posts or what job descriptions were written by generative AI, right? Like, because they sound vanilla and washed out because somebody lazy was just like, write me a job description for a plumber. And it's just like this, you know what I'm saying? And so I encourage people to use it, lean into it as a differentiator. And if you don't, if you rely on it as a crutch, you'll get washed out like the folks who think times tables are impressive still.
Cool. Well, we're kind of coming to an end here. And I'm just wondering, and I kind of ask everybody some what advice they have for our listeners oftentimes about staffing. But I'm wondering if there's a couple pieces of universal business advice that you kind of would recommend that people could follow that would really take their businesses to the next level.
I have two that come to mind. Number one is too often business owners get sucked into the day-to-day management, putting out fires, right? They'll come out of the crow's nest and start rowing the boat. And that's important and you have to do it sometimes. But I encourage owners to think about it in terms of there's tasks that are important and urgent, right? Like solving a customer service issue or an HR problem or whatever the thing is, you know, fixing equipment. And then there's things that are important but not urgent, like making your mission, vision, values, making your statement or making your like long-term strategy for hiring and path development. Those are incredibly important, but they don't have a deadline on them. And those are the things that get pushed. And so my first piece of advice is calendar that time, whatever it is, an hour a week, 3 hours a week, 5 hours a week, wherever you can fit it in, maybe 1 2-hour session every 2 weeks, calendar that time. Because if you don't put that in your calendar and you don't stick to it, you will not do it. That's the stuff that gets pushed to next quarter and next quarter and next quarter. And that's usually the biggest game changer when I work with people, is that I'm the accountability, right? So they set an appointment with me and every week or every 2 weeks, we're doing important, not urgent stuff. But if you don't have me, if you don't have somebody like that, you've got to create that structure yourself or you're going to just spin your wheels. And the second thing is, and again, another kind of plug for you, is delegate low cost functions. For instance, bookkeeping. It's incredibly important. I have immense respect for bookkeepers. But if you compare the cost and wages or whatever of a bookkeeper versus the value that an owner could bring to the business by offloading all of that time, it's a no-brainer. And too often we have business owners who, oh, I can do that, therefore I will. Mm-mm, don't do that. Figure out a way to gradually peel low-cost functions off of yourself as a business leader or a business owner. Remote staffing is a great way to do that. It's not the only way, but that's I would recommend strategically pursuing that.
Awesome. Yeah, I think like you talked about in your first principle, it's the tyranny of the urgent. And, you know, oftentimes, I think it's Roger Gerber in the E-Myth talks about, are you working in your business or on your business? And I think that, the concepts you're talking about, they are really talking about, you know, working on your business, you know, trying to pull away from the day-to-day so that you can see this in a larger framework and, you know, you don't get myopic and you're able to really see your business in a different way rather than when you're in the midst of the whirlwind as it is. So,
amen, brother.
Well, I really appreciate your insights today. And I was wondering, as we close, can you tell us where can everybody find more about you and what you do at Cultivate Advisors?
Yeah, thank you. I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. I try to post free resources and links and such. Even if you don't ever want to directly talk to me, go use some of the free resources that I post on LinkedIn. They're usually directly on our website at Cultivate. They can help too.
That's awesome. And I can highly recommend Cultivate Advisors. I've used them myself. My sister and the other business has used them as well. So I've had many great experiences with them. They are consummate professionals. And I would highly recommend that if you're interested in consulting and coaching services, that you would check them out. So thank you so much, Alex. Really appreciate your time today. Hope you have a great rest of the day. Thank you for joining us here on Beyond the Office. And we look forward to seeing you next time. So if you'd like to learn more about remote staffing, feel free to message us for our free guide, The 7 Deadly Sins of Remote Staffing, and how to make sure that you don't commit them and you're successful in your remote hiring journey.
That's it for today's episode. Thank you for tuning in and digging deep into what's ahead for the future of remote work. We'll be back next month with Bill for another episode. But until then, please visit Staffing Global's website for additional resources at staffdifferent.com. And remember, don't let the shift hit your plans.